Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Craig, how are you doing today?
Good.
Good, me too. That's good. Well, we're both good then. So, you know, there's no real good reason for us to do this, but I guess last week saw the release of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. You know, why not talk about Harry Potter? My wife and I have started to watch all the movies again. We've watched them all, of course. So we decided to, kind of how we did Star Wars last year, talk about each Harry Potter movie in order, starting with the first Harry Potter movie, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which I think in all other countries is called the Philosopher's Stone. Is that right? You're kind of the Harry Potter expert. Can you explain that to me right off the bat?
Well, it's translating it. I can't remember the exact detail, but it was the word sorcerer made more sense to American audiences than philosopher. Those words sort of carry a slightly different meaning. That's as much detail as I have right now. I'm not sure what all other countries it translates to, because it could be different, but that's the main reason. Sorcerer, I think, might have meant more to children in America for whatever reason.
Interesting. So the book, the actual official, like, you know, the first Harry Potter book is called The Philosopher's Stone. Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. I always thought it was the other way around for some reason. Okay.
Well, I guess it's the Philosopher's Stone, but even the book was Sorcerer's Stone.
Wait. Oh, when it was released in America?
Yes.
But not when it was released in England initially.
It was Philosopher's Stone in England as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Well, and the Philosopher's Stone is also an actual existing kind of MacGuffin,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
That's right. That's like a mythical thing. So,
kind of like the Holy Grail or something like that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Americans are dumb. Okay. Well, So right off the bat, like I said, you're a Harry Potter guy. What do you think of this movie? And what did you think of it when it came out? Had you read the books? How did you react to this? Et cetera, et cetera.
This movie actually got me started to reading the books. I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it after I'd had some sort of outpatient surgical procedure done. You know what? The less detail, the worse, because now that sounds awful. But I'll just say it was a minor procedure that I had done. And I had a whole bunch of movies that I was going to watch, because it required, like, you know, a whole week of just not doing anything. So I really should give more detail, but I won't. And I watched this movie, and I think every film fan understands that feeling when you watch a movie and for whatever reason you respond to it in such a way that it's like it hits you. It hit me like a ton of bricks, because for whatever reason I responded to it so much. And, you know, those movies that kind of make you want to delve into that world a little more, might motivate you to do research about it or to watch more movies like it or something. So that's how it was with me. I'd seen it the summer after it came out. I saw it on DVD. That was before Blu-ray was around, or I would have watched it on Blu-ray probably. And so I saw it, and it was just like this whole magical world. Someone on the outside who has always been like those people, it suddenly has been told, hey, you are very much like us, and in fact, you're super, super famous for some amazing things that your parents have done for you, which allowed yada, yada, yada. And it was just like, wow, man, I love this idea. And I actually started reading the books after I watched this movie.
Wow, interesting. Okay, yeah, I came to it with a lot of snark and snobbiness. I remember in 2001, there were the trailers for this movie, and then there were the trailers for The Fellowship of the Ring, and so from the beginning, those two franchises kind of, you know, were feuding in my head. I hadn't read The Lord of the Rings or any Harry Potter books. All I knew was Lord of the Rings was more of an intellectual kind of nerd thing, and I knew that Harry Potter was more of a kid's book series at that point. So that's kind of how I looked at it, and when I didn't see Sorcerer's Stone in the theater, I saw Fellowship of the Ring, and it blew me away, changed my life, and all these other things. And so from the get-go, I was dismissive of Harry Potter. And honestly, I didn't see this movie until the summer after Chamber of Secrets came out. I remember I was like working during the summer, and I was working close to home, so I could just go home, and every day I would go home and just like watch, you know, 40 minutes of a movie, and one week or so I
eat pizza.
Yeah, exactly. I would watch, like, you know, 1 week I watched basically both the first two Harry Potter movies, and the progression from the first one to the end of the second one, I was like, oh, okay, like, these aren't terrible. And then eventually I saw Azkaban, and that's kind of where I really got enthusiastic about the series. But so I was always skeptical about the series going in, and honestly, I feel like some of my skepticism remains to this day, just with these first two films, especially this first one. There's something about it that just does not connect with me. I feel like it is an excellent example of like franchise launching, you know, in terms of setting up the world, in terms of production design and themes and music and casting, of course, but in terms of like just a cinematic piece, it's missing an awful lot for me. I mean, and not from a scriptwriting standpoint either. I think that the story works really well. In fact, it's a really nice self-contained story, especially considering you have seven more movies until you can really consider it to be complete. But yeah, I think it all, for me, it comes down to the directing of this movie. It just feels, I don't know, it feels flat. It feels uninspired, not uninspired, but just utilitarian, I guess, is the way. But it's not, I wouldn't call it a bad movie for those reasons. It's just, I have a hard time really, you know, the rewatchability isn't there for me, and I have a hard time kind of being enthusiastic about it. So for you, like, you know, can you see what I'm talking about when you compare the film grammar and just the filmmaking of, let's say, The Sorcerer's Stone against Prisoner of Azkaban? Can you see where I'm coming from there?
So yeah, that's you've touched on something there that that's awfully, awfully deep. And for the further podcast for these other movies, we can even expound on that discussion, especially Prisoner of Azkaban. But I guess from my kind of love of that franchise, the first one has always been one of my favorites, and maybe I don't necessarily watch it with the same critical eye as I would a brand new movie that I've never seen and am hearing of for the first time, but I sort of feel the exact same way you do, but about Chamber of Secrets.
Okay.
I always harken back sort of to the first time I watched it. For me, it's always that magical, you know, creation of something brand new that I had never even thought of before. Because like you, when it came out in the theater, I don't even remember thinking about Harry Potter when it was out in the theater. I saw Fellowship of the Ring at midnight. Harry Potter wasn't even on my radar. To me, your description of kind of its shortfalls for you are kind of where I see it. That's how I view Chamber of Secrets. But
okay.
It's complicated because you mentioned, so Chamber of Secrets, as you said, Prisoner of Azkaban kind of hooks you into that world. That's interesting that you say that, not to delve off too deep because we can talk about this later, but the book actually takes the scope of that, of the world that J.K. Rowling is giving you and widens it like three times by introducing characters and continuity that she had always known about, but but you go two books and it's very, it's like you've got to be super patient because you're hearing about things and you don't really feel the payoff until later.
Right.
So I think you feel a lot of that in Chamber of Secrets, but I think as far as just laying the groundwork, hey, you know, welcome to this world. Sorcerer's Stone is probably in my top three or four of all the movies.
Yeah, I mean, I think laying the foundation is a really good way to put it. I mean, I think the best comparison I can make to another movie is Dr. No. You know, and I feel like it has a lot of the similar things where a lot of the movie, a lot of Dr. No for me is carried by the central performance, the theme song, and kind of the general world that's set up. But the actual filmmaking and the actual narrative thrust of everything is for me not super engaging. But again, it's hard to fault the movie for that because it's brilliant in a way. You know, I mean, again, like you look at the evolution of the tone of the movies, and it's clear that this first one was, oh, we'll get the guy that made The Pagemaster because this is basically a movie like The Pagemaster is. But then eventually we're going to get into, you know, darker territory and more action-based territory. And I think that's a fascinating way to craft a film franchise, and I think we can credit a lot of that to J.K. Rowling herself and David Heyman, the producer of the movies. But yeah, I think it's Chris Columbus. He pitches a softball to the kids. I mean, there's so many different examples of it. Like, there's like one of the better examples I have is The Moving Staircase. You know, we see it visually. It's reinforced to us by a character. And then later on in a scene, they're going up the stairs and the staircase moves. And I think Hermione says, the staircases move, remember? And then they go up a thing. And there's an ADR line of Ron saying, boy, as long as the staircases don't move again. And it's just a really great example of we have to hammer in this idea over and over again with dialogue, with exposition, and like thrice reinforced visual cues. And it's something that Alfonso Cuarón or David Yates would just do with one visual stroke and leave it at that, you know, and because they realize the audience is old enough to trust with just a little bit of visual language rather than, you know, 14 expository statements.
I think that's exactly why it changed at that point, because I think the main audience being kids, you also want to hammer in that explanation that, hey, these stairs move because, you know, while you guys are older than 2 years old, you don't really remember something that happened 15 minutes ago. But but also I think the kids want to hear more about, maybe that's just a little bit of it, but, oh yeah, that's right, the stairs move. Yeah, say it again, because I want to hear how cool it is, you know, the stairs move.
Right, yeah. They go back to the part where the stairs move. Yeah.
Tell me more about stairs moving. They move. Oh, that's great. But I think that's really it. And while Cuarón has a really stylistic signature to his movie, it's going to be a great discussion for this, for Prisoner of Azkaban, because Sorcerer's Stone is so well adapted from that book. I mean, there are slight differences, but it's so well adapted from that book, and that book is not a big book. It's not long at all, and it truly is a kid's book. If if you're 11 years old and, you know, you can read that and understand what's going on. I mean, there are some deeper concepts that are fleshed out, you know, books later, but you can get the gist of it, and Sorcerer's Stone, it just adapts that perfectly. And so what I think those that find it to maybe fall a little flat or to maybe find some padding in ways of repetitive dialogue, it's because it's like over two, it's like 2.5 hours or something, or maybe a little less than that. And really, you could probably do it in two, I'm not sure, but I think that's part of it. And Cuarón, you know, didn't adapt it very well. he did some amazing things in his corrective adaptation, but he made some head-scratching decisions, and why did you leave this out? There's no point in leaving it out. It would have been great for the movie, and his movie's a little bit shorter, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that's kind of a struggle for some fans of the books and the movies, but it's, without hesitation, Prisoner of Azkaban is one of the better films, for sure, from a cinematic standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, and this one... I mean, it's just so much of it just comes back down to it's a kid's movie. But I feel like I understand the adaptation, you know, is maybe a little bit more direct. But there's, like, certain things that, again, like, I guess nothing is ruined going forward except for maybe the visualization of the attack on Harry's parents. Like, the flashback of Voldemort attacking Harry's parents is legit, like, bad. Like, it's not even, it doesn't even look as good as something from, like, ABC's Once Upon a Time or something like that. You know, like, it is such a bad staging of a high stakes, you know,
scene.
That it's, I mean, that's one of the few things in this movie that's damaging the whole franchise for me. You know, it's just kind of just visually just atrocious, and so much of the movie, I feel like, is just staged in these just kind of, like, boring, wide, reverse shot things where it's all about, it's all about utility, I guess, for Chris Columbus, and it makes sense when you're working with kids and special effects, you know, like, you can't really get too fancy when you're dealing with so much risk and so much money. And I understand that, and I'll cut him some slack there. But in little things like, you know, staging a magical wizard attack on two adults, that's something where you have full control. You know, you can make that as intense as you want.
But I'm not sure that I bring up an excellent point, because that is a focal point of the entire series,
right.
Book-wise and movie-wise. But did he have total control? Did he have J.K. Rowling sitting there saying, nope, Nope.
I don't think so. I don't think Chris Columbus is the kind of director.
It was like that for other books.
Sure. No, I know. I mean, her and Coran definitely beefed about stuff. I remember hearing that. But, you know, I mean, I think if you look at Rowling's relationship with David Yates later on, she is not one to step on visual flourishes. And if you look at Chris Columbus's handling of the rest of his film or the rest of his filmography, really, he's not exactly a visual.
What,
you know, maestro.
So, but that's a focal. What I mean by that's the focal point of the series is that from the book, as we said, it was a very accurate adaptation. The book just gives you a moment from that. In the seventh book, you actually see that whole morning, that whole evening, rather, through the eyes of Voldemort. She goes back and for 20 pages gives you the whole afternoon and evening of what that was like. In the first book, you get maybe 5 sentences. And so, yeah, while he could have expounded on that and you know...
Well, it's not that I needed
done more different things or... I mean, I agree. There's lots of things that don't look great in the Harry Potter movies, like when he's playing Quidditch and... But, yeah, I actually agree with you. I could have used more, but he had so little to go off of. I mean, even the bad effects
are
kind of like, yeah, that's kind of how the book described it. It's kind of like, I need more.
Lower frame rate. Everything went lower frame rate with bad outer glow effects. I guess to finish off that topic, I mean, I guess in the end, there's so much expository dialogue in Sorcerer's Stone that works pretty well. So I guess I wish they had just left it at that, you know, and not illustrated it. But going to the Quidditch section, I going into this recent rewatch, I expected that section to be the hardest to watch in terms of effects, you know, because, I mean, 2001 was a long time ago in terms of what people were doing with effects. However, when I rewatched it, I realized that it's one of the more fun and colorful and exciting moments in the movie, and I wasn't really fazed by, you know, the green screen and the CGI, because it just has a colorful, exciting charm, and I feel like that's where, I feel like that and the chess sequence, you know, the full-scale chess sequence are the two sequences in the movie where Columbus really has a lot of fun with the world, with the camera, with the action. And I was actually kind of charmed by it, so it didn't actually bother me that much.
Well, if you ever get a notion, there's a moment in the Quidditch scene where it's like, oh, there's a CGI Harry that's like, oh, it looks like Gumbo. And then there's on the troll, when he's getting flacked around on the troll, that's kind of like, oh, he just kind of looks like a rubber Harry. Yeah. But that's also kind of the same in Chamber of Secrets, which I think they film just like right there next to each other. But
right, and it's like in Spider-Man and Fellowship of the Ring has a moment where I think Legolas is on top of the cave troll, and it's clearly a CGI dummy.
It was probably the same template. They just superimposed the Harry over Legolas.
I don't want too much of the conversation or too much of my, you know, issues with the movie to come down to effects, because I really don't think that's the limitation. I think the limitation is, you know, Chris Columbus had a set amount of resources and used them in a certain way. And again, I have a hard time not comparing it to Fellowship of the Ring, which looks like it was made 10 years after Sorcerer's Stone. You know, granted, Peter Jackson did not have to work with kids, and that is much more difficult. However, he did do way more location photography than Columbus, which makes things more difficult. So it's, it's, again, these two franchises for me, I think will always be kind of somehow competing or connected to one another. And Lord
maybe
of the
just
will
the first
always win.
Maybe just the first three Harry Potters, 4 through 8, or do you compare them to The Hobbit as well?
Not necessarily directly, not like year to year, but in terms of just the whole universe, you know, we have six films on one side and 8 films on the other. Well, now 9 films on the other to explore these universes. So I feel like the universes are always warring against each other, and the question for me is always, you know, which one do I want to spend more time in? And for me, Peter Jackson's Middle Earth always wins out for whatever reason. But overall, it's a movie I've seen at least 3 times now, and it's always enjoyable. It's always a good. Again, it's just the whole franchise is just a fascinating study of Hollywood filmmaking in terms of how you set the stage and then how you organically change the movies as they go, you know, and it says a lot for, you know, the way movies are made. People complain a lot about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, all looking the same. Well, with Harry Potter, you know, that's a universe that actually changes over time.
Yeah.
Although now it does seem like there is a house style because David Yates is directing five of these things.
And I think, and so between 2 and 3, it definitely changed. Between 3 and 4, it changed, and that's another interesting discussion.
Yeah.
Between 4 and 5, it changed, and 5, you know, even 5 and 6 is different. The same director, 5 and 6 are slightly different because of just almost kind of like a filtered. I don't know. It's so beautiful, but it is different. They each have slightly differences in tone, I think. Yates's Potter is, I think he's been able to fine tune it as he's been able to grow as a director in directing these Harry Potter movies. So it's been really a great thing to have one talented director really, you know, bringing home these last, you know, handful of movies. But it's infuriating when you read old interviews of the Goblet of Fire director talk about purposely changing things about the look and feel and, you know, atmosphere. It makes me want to, I mean, he deserves a stunner for sure.
Yeah. We'll get there when we get there. I was a huge fan of that movie when I first saw it, but we'll talk that.
Oh,
well,
me
I'm
too.
Definitely, yeah.
No, it's one of those I could put on and let it play. I just love
these movies that much, but it is, yeah, it is a detriment.
Interesting.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking about the movies going forward. And so next time we talk, I guess we will talk about Chamber of Secrets.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.